Hello and welcome to this episode of Divine Downloads. I am your host, Elizabeth Overton, and per usual, I am freaking stoked to be here today with you all. And because I have the amazing Victor Parentoni on my podcast today, he is the founder of Zen Stoic Mastery, and he is a results and performance coach. And in his work, he inspires clients to be their best in life, love, and in business. Welcome to the show, Victor!
Thank you so much, Lizbeth, and thank you for that introduction. I remember hearing about your podcast when you had first started it, and you were telling me about it, and it's such an honor and so cool to be on it, to be a guest here. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you are so welcome. So yes, this is another one of those full circle moments I seem to be having lots of lately. And I love to share with people how I met my guests, because to me, life is all about the journey, not the destination, and about the connections and the relationships.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, indeed.
And so what's so cool is that Victor was actually one of my business coaches, and it's so fun to be having coffee with you right now. Well, not really coffee, but like coffee talk with you, because there are so many wisdom bits that you taught me. So I would love for you to tell our listeners, a little bit about your story, like how you got here, and let's just start with that. How about that?
Excellent. All right. Yeah, I'm happy to go into that. So pretty much I actually started coaching a few years back. It was probably maybe like 5 years ago when I really started diving into the topic. And I remember I didn't know what a coach was. I didn't know that you could be paid to speak on stage or paid to coach somebody. I thought the extent of that was counselors and therapists. I thought, you know, if you're going to help people one-on-one, that's the way you got to go. And I was actually a personal trainer at the time when I had that belief and that notion. I was starting my first business, and I remember a friend of mine sent me a video of a very famous speaker who I didn't know of at the time. And then as soon as I saw this guy speaking on stage, I was riveted by it. And immediately my first thought was like, I can do that. And there was no logical explanation to tell me that, yes, you're qualified to do this or anything like that, because I did not have any experience of the kind. But it grabbed my attention in such a way like nothing else ever had. And I decided, okay, like this is something I want to do. This is something I want to study in terms of human behavior and how to, get people results by helping them control their emotions, control their thoughts, and then alter them so that they had a more aligned strategy to live their life by. And the first person that I ever coached was actually one of my best friends, who was born with a mild case of cerebral palsy. And so you wouldn't really notice that he had the condition unless you watched him walk, in which case his left leg kind of limped a little bit. And I remember, one night he was suffering around this topic, and he told me, he's like, this is my curse. And he was in such pain around this particular thing. And he would get down on himself about it. He wouldn't allow himself to be happy or to be fulfilled in any way. And I remember in that instance, I helped him reshape that belief that he had held on to his entire life into his left leg is not his curse. It is his gift, and it makes him who he is. And to put in perspective what this did for him in terms of external results, is he, when we first met, he was he's 5'11", and he weighed 135 pounds. So he was pretty skinny, and he could not do a body weight squat when we met. And after he had that belief, the belief shift, within, 10 or 12 months, he had put on 35 pounds of muscle. He was squatting with a barbell and two plates on the side, like just crazy stuff in terms of what he was able to accomplish. And it all started with a belief change. So I thought to myself, well, if I could do that for him, I can do that for other people. I don't know what that was or what I could call that in terms of career, because at the time I didn't have the words for it, but I was like, whatever that is, I got to do that for more people. And then slowly I started working my way up, doing more networking, finding the right people, and until I got hired by one of the largest coaching organizations in the world, and basically went in there, worked there for 3 years, coached over 1,000 people, and really got a good understanding of human behavior. And so much so that I ended up creating my own philosophy, which is Zen Stoicism, hence Zen Stoic Mastery, which combines Zen Buddhism and Stoic philosophy. And I put them together into a philosophy that I know works to help people master their emotions and self-sabotage.
So good. Okay, lots to unpack. So just give me a minute.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I love, so one tweetable is obviously, your curse is actually your gift. Like, just marinate on that for a second, people, right? Like, it's such, and also I think I share an obsession with human behavior. Human behavior is so fascinating. And I'm so, as a nurse for 21 years, I am learning that I love to observe trends and behavior, right? And it's so cool how certain groups of people, whether it's a certain profession or a certain mindset or belief, like you're saying, we tend to have these behaviors that are conditioned. You know, we just pick up these things. Sometimes they're not our own. So I love this idea. Your curse is actually your gift, and how you really helped your friend. What a freaking awesome story. I was like, I want you to be my personal trainer when you were saying
Oh my gosh. That's where it all began.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, this is a perfect segue, because you talked a lot about the pain and the curse. And I just want to share, I'm a huge word. I call it a word nerd. I'm obsessed with words because, you know, they also have frequency. And I believe that words have helped heal me, just in what I've been able to read and ingest, and also the words that I have been able to say to myself, like talking about shift in beliefs. And one of the things, let me start with this. All these things are coming up. When we were working together, the most profound takeaway shift that I had was, you can still be afraid. You can still have this idea and also like continue to make steps towards what you desire, and like, it's going to be okay.
Yes.
Absolutely. That was, we would revisit that every time. It's like one day it finally clicked. I mean, I think I was sitting on the sofa. I can still remember like where I was sitting. So, I love that.
Absolutely. That's a super important takeaway. And I'm glad you were able to take that away, because anybody who's doing anything worthwhile to themselves is going to encounter fear. They're going to encounter moments of vulnerability, especially if they are quote unquote putting themselves out there. And so this is something that obviously is going to be occurring over and over again, no matter what it is that you're doing. There's always the risk of scrutiny from others. There's always the risk of, you know, fearing failure. But at the end of the day, the failure is, or the fear rather, is not put on you by some external force. It's something you create internally. And so you can change that, or you can act in spite of it. Because the truth is, there are no rules when it comes to that fear that you have essentially put on yourself.
So, and that was another profound teachable moment that you taught me about the fear is the internal thing. So that's huge. Okay, so now I want to share this beautiful, these words that are on your website that I think are so poignantly describe like you and your mission and your vision, and that is, you will achieve greatness when you channel the pain of your past into a purpose that serves the common good.
Yes.
can you talk a little bit? I don't know how much you want to share. Is this from your own experience with pain, or can you shed a little light on this? Because I think this is very profound.
Yes. So this definitely came from my own experience of pain, and I remember those words actually came out of my mouth during a coaching session, and it seemed as though it was random. And then I kept on that topic with almost every session that I had for like the next week. Just because when it comes to helping people find their why of, or their purpose as to why they're doing their business, it usually does not stem from a necessarily happy place. It usually stems from a very painful place of some sort. And it's the process of turning that pain channeling it into a purpose that not only solves your problem of that pain, not only alleviates your pain, but also helps to alleviate the pain of others. Because when we basically solve a problem for ourselves and other people around us, it magnifies the impact of our solution that we've come up with, or our purpose and whatever it is that we're going after. So for me, that actually started when I was about 7 years old. On the day of my 7th birthday is the day that I found out that my mom had passed away from cancer. And this was the most painful moment of my life. And it's a moment that essentially takes away your innocence in a flash, where you start to learn that the world isn't fair, and that there is pain and there is suffering in the world. And ultimately, as a 7-year-old, one of the only conclusions that you end up drawing is this mentality of victimization, right? You think, poor me. And then your family, with the best of intentions to coddle you and make you comfortable in these times, while they do a lot of good and they share a lot of love with you, simultaneously, they almost enable that victim mentality, not on purpose, but it's a side effect. It's a byproduct sometimes that might occur in a situation like that. And for a lot of my life, I didn't know how to manage my emotions. I did not know how to manage my thoughts or the belief systems in my head that were playing this internal dialogue that was creating pain and fear within me and inadequacy. And I remember it was so bad that, you know, I never felt like my own person, right? I always felt like I had to rely on others for that, and always felt like a victim, like the world was happening to me. And I remember one day I was walking through one of my old jobs, and it clicked in my head. I started asking myself the question, what would it be like if I emulated my mother's light each and every day and everything that I did, but I did it on a massive scale? And it was once I asked that question, it clicked for me. And I started thinking to myself, my mom's light cannot die with her, right? I had the most amazing mom for the 7 years that I had her. And what she gave me and what she taught me couldn't simply just die with her. So instead of looking at my pain and feeling sorry for myself and feeling like a victim, I decided to take ownership of it and channel that pain into a purpose, into something that was constructive, not just for myself, but for others. And out of that came my obsession with emotions and belief systems and how to basically shape them towards a better initiative, towards a higher purpose that not just served myself and helped me feel better and be more efficient in my life and more effective, but also do that for the people around me. Because if it's just for me, then it's not going to really be serving a purpose at all. But if it's for the people around me, then that can magnify and it can serve more people and more and more and more. So that's basically where that quote comes from. It comes from me experiencing the greatest pain of my life and then doing something about it.
Oh, people are crying listening to this. Oh, oh my God. Okay. I just have to wow. Like big hugs, big, just like, oh my God.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, I've heard this. And when I saw those words on your podcast or on your website, I was like I could feel your mom. It's so wild. Mm-hmm. Like that's just what I was intuiting just based on, you know, what you had shared with me. And so, okay, I just want people to take this in because I really like to, on this show, try to model for people what is possible for a 7-year-old boy to, on your birthday, you find out that you lost your beautiful mother. Obviously, this did not happen overnight. This didn't happen, you know, it probably took quite a long time. So for people listening, if they are suffering and from whatever, if it's physical pain, emotional pain, psychological, you know, the world that we live in can be very scary. Obviously, if we focus on how bad it is and how we're victims, what would you suggest, you know, people just like little baby steps, how they can start to turn the ship around on managing these really big emotions?
Yes. Well, this is actually something that I talk about in the ebook that I recently released, which is called The Zen Stoic Path of Inner Peace. Now, I created this ebook because what I noticed is that the thing that sabotaged people in results, both personally and professionally, was a lack of inner peace, a distraction that occurs primarily because of the chaos that they have in their own mind, this endless battle that rages on. And one of the things that I had talked about in there was the idea and the concept of self-love, which is where a lot of this begins, right? If you're going to master your emotions, you want to understand first and foremost what they are. Basically, our emotions are the thing that allow us to interpret and define the human experience. It tells us whether something is good, whether it's bad, whether we should move towards it or move away from it. And the thing to remember about emotions is that emotions are like fire in this sense. When fire is channeled properly and used responsibly, it can cook our meals, it can heat our homes, and provide a lot of good for us. When it's used carelessly, it can start a wildfire and burn everything that you built to the ground. Emotions are very much the same. When we channel our emotions, we channel these feelings towards specific outcomes, towards things that we're very mindful of, they can be incredibly useful. They can create a lot of joy and fulfillment within us. If we're careless with our emotions, it's as if the emotions take on an agenda of their own to simply expand themselves. So if somebody was angry, for instance, and they got so angry and they're fighting with somebody that they got to a point where they forgot why they're angry in the first place, and it just came about expressing that anger. That's the equivalent of an emotion becoming like a wildfire. And one of the ways that we learn to channel this is by learning the process of self-love. Now, self-love, the process in this, the Zen Stoic Path of Inner Peace, goes like this. There are four steps to it. Because many people talk about self-love, they put it in their Instagram quotes, and they talk about it on Twitter as if it's just this thing that, oh, just love yourself. And sometimes it can be that simple, but sometimes it's not. And I've broken it down into four steps just for somebody to be able to tangibly understand what it is that they need to do. So the first step of self-love is self-awareness. Self-awareness is ultimately being aware that there is such thing as a self. And what I mean by that is that the self and our identity is something that we create. It's not preordained, right? We create it through our life experiences, through the way that we define our experiences and our belief systems. And we ultimately create this identity that we attach ourselves to. Now, in Zen philosophy, the self, there's something called the practice of non-self, which means essentially to realize that there is no self and to detach from that entirely. So I'll explain it as simple as I can, because this can be a bit of a dicey topic. But you want to look at the self like this. The self ultimately is the part of us that notices and observes the human experience. It is not the human experience. It is the part that notices the human experience. So in other words, we have what's called a subject-object relationship with our experiences. And you can think about it like this. The subject is us, ourselves, our true selves, the part that is aware. The object can be other people, events, things, thoughts, emotions, belief systems, anything that we're putting our attention on. Now, what happens when it comes to focusing on ourselves too deeply is it actually is the best example of this to kind of get a picture of it is to think about when you watch a movie, and hopefully it's a good movie. And when you know it's a good movie, it's because you feel like you are in the movie. Like you've forgotten that you're watching that movie and you're almost taking on the emotions of the character in it. And so when you're taking on the emotions of the character in the movie, when they're about to do something exciting, you start to feel your heart racing. If they're going to do something embarrassing, you start to cringe. Or if they're entering a scary situation, you start to like cover up as if you're about to be attacked, right? And what that is called object consciousness. Now, object consciousness happens when we invest ourselves so much into an idea, thought, emotion, or belief that we begin to perceive life through that idea, thought, emotion, or belief. And we lose self-awareness when we're doing that. So when we're so invested into our identity, into this idea that we've created through the years of our lives, then we start to lose perspective over the bigger picture of things. So one of the fastest ways to do this is simply to do a mindfulness meditation where you simply begin to feel your feet on the ground, you feel your body in the room, you bring yourself into the room, you begin to breathe, bring yourself back into your body, and you simply begin to observe your thoughts and emotions and the things around you without actually being attached to it. So that's the first step when it comes to self-awareness.
I like
and, Yeah. So it gives us an opportunity to really detach from our emotions and our thoughts, because the biggest problem we have with them is just thinking that we are them. And then from that point, you go into self-acceptance, which is basically accepting yourself as you are right now, right? Yes, we've had pain in the past. Yes, we've had traumatic experiences and things that most of us would consider unforgivable. But the point is, you're here now. And if you don't accept yourself now as you are, it's going to be very difficult to move forward and very difficult to move past the filter that you create through all of your past trauma. So we need to accept ourselves in the now as we are and let it go. And following self-acceptance is self-embrace. Now we turn the acceptance into gratitude. We don't just accept our experiences, but we become grateful for them. We use them to embrace who we are and to add to our self-validation from the lessons that we've learned, rather than depending on someone else or the outside world to validate ourselves. And then from that point, we get into a place of self-expression, which is simply living and acting as you are. Because self-expression is not something that we conceptualize, it's something that we live. And that's essentially the process to self-love.
Oh my gosh, I have full-on freaking angel bumps. Okay. my favorite step, I got to have a favorite step, is that self-expression. Yes. OMG. Let the out of the class say amen. Oh, that's so good. Self-expression, it's living as you are. I love this four-step process. This is, I'm just going to say it, amazeballs.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so now I'm just starting to, you know, my brain is like, whoa, I have so many questions. I know that you were a personal trainer, obviously, at one point, and you're also a very accomplished martial artist.
Yes, I'd like to think so. Not as accomplished as I'd like to be, but, you know, it's a process, right? So,
remind me, is it, which art is it?
So I've done a variety of different martial arts. The one that I focus on mainly now, above all else, is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
That's a mouthful. Okay, tell us, what is that exactly?
So Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's derived from the Japanese art of Jiu-Jitsu, which comes from its base level of Judo. And Judo means the gentle way. So ultimately, what Judo is aiming to do is to use the opponent's energy against them. Now, Judo is primarily throws and takedowns, whereas Jiu-Jitsu is done on the ground and primarily focuses on submissions. So it's basically you and your opponent attempting to submit each other via choke or joint lock of some sort, like an arm lock or a shoulder lock or a choke of some kind. And you're basically playing this game with one another where you're fighting, and each time you submit your opponent, it is a metaphorical death. And you're able to simulate this kind of experience with one another over and over and over again without actually hurting each other.
Well, there's a bonus. Okay, that's so I'm just thinking of all these things. So did you start doing martial arts? How old were you when you started doing martial arts?
So I started doing martial arts at 6 years old. It wasn't jiu-jitsu. I did taekwondo when I was 6 years old, but I was very into competing. My dad and I would, you know, we trained at home, we trained at the classes, and then we would go to tournaments and compete when I was a kid, starting at like 7 years old.
Okay, so that, because I was kind of thinking, okay, chicken or the egg, I'm thinking like Stoicism, Zen, Buddhism, martial arts, like when you're talking about submission, and it's just so fascinating, like, you know, the human behavior, like we're talking about how all of these things have melded into this beautiful expression of who you are.
Yes.
It's Thank so, you. Oh yeah, it's so damn juicy. Oh my gosh.
It.
Yeah, it's so good. So you have already shared so much wisdom and amazing value. And I do like to ask people on this show, it is called Divine Downloads. And to me, that's like this wisdom, this hit, this gut level knowing, I don't know, upload, download, transmission, whatever you want to call it, where you're in this, what I call place, both mm-hmm. in your mind and your heart and your soul, where you're actually able to receive this wisdom that you absolutely need for your soul journey. Mm-hmm. And once you receive it, you're not the same person you that you were before, because you know now, you know this diamond, you know this wisdom. And obviously you've shared some very incredible wisdom and experiences. And I know you have a lot of them, but is there one that like comes to mind that you want to share with us?
Absolutely. I definitely have quite a few I could go through, but I'd say one of the most important downloads that I'd say I would have, it's this. It's to be a student of your results rather than your ideals. And one of the reasons why this is so important is because I used to live primarily in my imagination, right? Wishing something would be one way and then noticing in my external world that it was another, and complaining about the external world rather than the common denominator, which was myself. When I learned to prioritize and become a student of my results, my failures, my mistakes, and everything like that, it allowed me to actually take a sense of ownership. And what it also allowed me to do is realize that there is no separation between myself and the outside world, and that my ego, my identity, is simply an illusion. Now, it's not that that illusion is not useful, because it is. It makes our lives meaningful and adds a bunch of variety to the pie. But at the end of the day, we can realize that we are one with everything. And if we are to realize that, then you start to understand that you are a creator of all your experiences. So you may have something in your head that you think, okay, this is how life should be. And then on the outside, doesn't quite match that. The correct thing to do in that situation is not necessarily to complain about how things are on the outside, but to change yourself first. And to quote Wayne Dyer, right, when you change the way that you look at, the things that you look at change. And ultimately, that was one of the most profound downloads I ever got, was to be a student of my results, not my ideals.
Hashtag winning. So good. I literally feel like I'm having a Victor coaching session with my listeners. And so I hope that it's as powerful and profound for the listeners as it always is and was for me and our sessions. So be a student of your results rather than your ideals. That is hashtag genius.
Yes. And that's one of those things when you notice you're getting the same results over and over again in any area of life. One of the most common places this shows up is in relationships. You know, people will date the same people in different forms over and over and over again, and then complain that all women or all men are like this, right? And they'll have a generalization of some kind, not realizing or remembering that they are the common denominator there. And so knowing that you're the common denominator in all of your problems and challenges is one of the most liberating things you can do, because it takes you out of victimization. It puts you into a place of ownership where you can actually become the creator of your experiences rather than the recipient of them.
You become the creator of your experiences rather than the recipient of them. Love it. Woo! So good.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, and obviously, this four-step process to self-love would probably be a phenomenal way to become a student of your results, right?
Absolutely. Because when you are in that place, right, that first step of self-awareness just lets you know where you're at, right? It meets you where you're at and lets you know, okay, we've got to move forward from here. Because one of the biggest problems that I've noticed with clients as well as myself, because I'm not exempt for this by any stretch of the imagination, is not being honest with myself about where I'm at, right? Either trying to sugarcoat things or keep myself in my comfort zone instead of saying, hey, this is what's going on, this is the problem, and I need to do something about it.
I like to call that vulnerability with a capital V.
That's right. That's right. Many people think vulnerability is weakness, but the truth is vulnerability is strength, because it is when you are not allowing your ego to take precedence over what is in your best interest.
So good. Vulnerability is my life's work. And I will tell you, as a recovering perfectionist, if it's not quote perfect, then I'm not even going to do it. It's so liberating to give yourself permission to be very vulnerable, and man, is there so much power in that?
Oh, yes.
it's far more fun, and I've done it both ways. Oh my gosh. Okay, so this has been more fun than I could shake a stick at. So I just want to thank you, Victor. And of course, let's tell people how they can get in your vortex. Tell us all the
things. Yes, absolutely. So I actually have a few ways that you can get in touch with me or get familiar with some of the work that I do. One of them, since we're on a podcast, I'll start with this one. I actually do have a podcast. It's called the Zen Stoic Podcast. And you can find it on any platform that you would listen to a podcast, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, Google, whatever it is that your jam is. So we actually do daily episodes. And so you'll find over 100 episodes there that you can start hacking away at that go through all different topics. And normally the podcast is a daily podcast, so 6 days a week it's up. We took a temporary break because we're doing a pivot, but it's actually going to be back on in 2 weeks, revamped. So we'll have that podcast going up. You can also find me on Facebook at Zen Stoic Mastery or on Instagram, ZenStoic_V. And if you are interested in the ebook that I was talking about, the website is www.zenstoicmastery.com/ebook. The ebook is completely free. Feel free to download it, and it'll start to answer a lot of your questions about how you can master your emotions and begin to create inner peace so that you can end self-sabotage, both personally and professionally.
You are providing some serious downloads and some serious value. Hey, Victor.
I do my best. I do what I can.
Seriously, you're amazing. So, okay, so I'm going to put all this stuff, of course, on the show notes in case people aren't able to have access to a writing utensil when they're listening. So before we bow out, and of course it's 5:55 angel numbers. I have to pull up on my little app, but any final parting wisdom, Victor? Wisdom bombs that you want to drop for us before we sign off today?
Yes, absolutely. The wisdom bomb that I would like to drop on everybody, and it's something that I say because I know even myself, I need to hear this all the time, is that I'll actually end it with this story. Right, this particular story is responsible for more breakthroughs with my clients than almost anything else. It's a short Zen story, but it is incredibly profound. So the story goes like this. It's called The Two Monks in the River. So there are two monks who are very devoted to their practice, and they want to seek enlightenment, so they go wherever they can go to find a Zen master who will be able to help them get there. And so they leave their temple, and they're in search of a new place to practice. Now, they're so devoted that they've made a vow to never look a woman in the eye or speak with one or communicate with one in any way, shape, or form. And they're going on this journey, and they approach a forest that they have to go through. As they begin to go through the forest, they come up on this river. It's very, very choppy and pretty dangerous to get across, but they know they need to get across it. So they start to get closer to the river, they approach it, and right before they're about to cross, all of a sudden they notice this beautiful woman in a silk dress looking at the river in distress. For one, it's dangerous. And two, she's wearing this beautiful silk dress that is going to get completely ruined in the river. So she's not sure what to do. Immediately, between the two monks, the senior monk, without any hesitation whatsoever, gestures to her to pick her up and bring her across the river. And so she accepts. He brings her across the river and he puts her down. The two monks continue to walk on their journey, and they get to this point where they're walking. It's been a couple hours, and the junior monk just has this grimace on his face. He is frustrated. He's got a ton of tension in his body, and finally he blurts out to the senior monk. He says, "You touched that woman. You picked her up. We're not supposed to look a woman in the eye, and you picked her up and carried her. How do you reconcile this? You broke your vow." And without any hesitation, he looks over at him, and he says, "Yeah, but I put her down at the river, and you're still carrying her."
I remember this story well, Victor.
And so the thing that we want to remember is that anything that you're carrying up until this point, you want to be able to put it down, because the fact is that even if something served you at one point in time, there's a very high likelihood that maybe the belief system's out of date. And we all have that junior monk within us, the one that wants to stick to the way that we think things are supposed to get done and to the rules and to the rationality. But we also have the senior monk within us, the part of us that does what's right in our heart and soul and doesn't fall prey to just the beliefs that we were given by the outside world.
Absolutely amazing. What a phenomenal story. I vividly remember that story that you shared with me. Oh, and I think so many people will, like, literally people are like parking their cars right now. Like, oh shoot, seriously? Okay. Like such amazing wisdom. Seriously, Victor, this has been so amazing to reconnect with you. And I still carry all your wisdom with me. And it's definitely helped me a lot, honestly, to hear be, this is, I think the 27th or the 28th episode. And, so of the podcast, so I just did it and I'm keep doing it. And so I would encourage all my listeners to, again, you know, to look at your beliefs, look at your behaviors. What kind of experience are you creating for yourself? And you do have the power to change. So thank you so much, Victor, for coming on today. Anything else you want to share before we go?
Thank you so much. And I definitely want to acknowledge all of your listeners, because many people, especially when they're frustrated in life or when they have any kind of challenges, normally they complain about it and they don't do anything about it. But I think anybody here who's listening to Divine Downloads, there's something within you that you're not just going to accept any of your challenges, but you're going to actively do something about it, and which is a big reason why many of you here are listening. And I thank you. I thank the listeners for allowing us to have this conversation and being supportive here of this podcast.
Oh my gosh. You're just giving me all these, this just joy and yumminess, Victor. So thank you so much. And so thanks for everybody for tuning in. If this is your first time, thank you. I hope you're going to stay for more. And if you're a repeat listener, thank you. And please, you know, sharing is caring. So share with all your favorite peeps. And until next time, keep knowing and believing that you are amazing. And especially in the times when you feel like you're not supported, trust me, I promise you are completely supported. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.